This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. From the moment our kids are born, we want to give them the best of everything, right? Every parent wants to provide nutritious and delicious things for their little ones to eat. The tricky part, though, is deciding which foods are best and how to prepare them in a realistic amount of time. With so much conflicting nutritional information out there, parents can and frequently do, and I speak from experience, drive themselves completely bonkers trying to make healthy choices. And as if that weren't bad enough, you got to throw in science, too. Recent nutrition research found that most children fail to meet the recommendations for important nutrients like calcium, vitamin D, protein, fiber, and iron. According to the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, fewer than 50% of toddlers aged 2 and 3 get the recommended daily amounts of fruits and vegetables. More surprising than that is a 2012 study of parents that found that most had never received advice on how to feed their kids. This lack of knowledge can have really serious long-term effects. Just one quick example is that research was showing that kids who have poor nutrition during the first 5 years of life also end up having behavioral problems later on. So what's the solution? Well, it could be superfoods. But not superfoods in the way that you hear it defined in the media, like one bite will cure cancer and everything like that. We're talking about superfoods that are delicious, beautiful, unprocessed, bursting with nutrition, and kids will want to eat them.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Dana Angelo White, who is the author of First Bites, Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. Dana, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Why do you think there's been so much interest lately in food? And I'm asking that because I get pretty much every kind of parenting book that ever gets published shows up at my office here. And there have been a lot more in this past, like past 6 months or a year, on nutrition and food and recipes and things like that than there have been probably in the previous 3 or 4 years combined.
Really? Well, that's interesting. I mean, I'm happy to hear that. I don't know. I'd like to think it's because more people are getting into the kitchen and feeding their families and eating less takeout. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
You know, I probably would have said exactly the opposite.
Really?
I mean, I haven't seen that trend. I think there are people who talk about it a lot, but I think that most of them are still incredibly busy, and so you run into Trader Joe's and you grab something that doesn't look like it has too many preservatives in it, and you can throw it in the microwave anyway.
All right, so maybe we can meet somewhere in the middle. And, you know, you're probably right, too. I mean, I definitely, the frustration I hear from a lot of the parents that, you know, that I'm friendly with socially and also that I hear from professionally is a lot about that kind of time crunch. You know, so there's the desire, the willingness, the wanting to use fresh foods, but then it comes down to I don't know what to do with it. I'm not really sure what really is, by definition, good for me, and or I don't have the time. So I feel that way in a lot of ways as well. I mean, I kind of have a curve on the nutrition part of things. But, you know, my household is very busy too. So I definitely did create this book in mind because this really is what we do at my house. These are the recipes have to be fast. They have to be easy. And also I prefer that they're healthy too.
Sounds like that's almost an optional one, but
it is never. It kind of comes more automatic to me. Let's put it that way. And I think I mean, my definition of healthy, I mean, it comes from my background, my education in nutrition. I have a master's degree in nutrition. I'm a registered dietitian. But that also means that I understand the concept of moderation. So, you know, this book and my kitchen is not filled with nothing but tofu and carrot sticks and things. I mean, there's real food here. I use real ingredients. I just prefer for them to be fresh and seasonal, and there to be a little bit of everything.
Oh, well, we're going to be talking about a lot of that. But I want to have you take us back just a little bit and to a word that's on the cover of the book, which is superfoods. And that's another thing I think that there's been. This one, actually, there definitely has been. It's like every time you open up the newspaper or turn on your computer, whatever, there's like another article about vitamin D deficiency or, now it's yams and then it's blueberries and something else and oats. It's like there's always seems to be some kind of a new miracle food. What's your kind of lay definition of a superfood? What do you mean by that?
I think it's simple, I also see the word superfood out there, and I think it's misused in a lot of ways. So, big kind of part of the introduction of the book is giving a definition for it in terms of my perspective. So, for me, a superfood needs to be, first of all, it needs to be delicious. I believe that all the superfoods, the 50 that I identify in this book, also are kind of pleasing to the eye. They're colorful, they're vibrant, they're fresh, and then that they offer good nutrition. So it doesn't need to be, and it really shouldn't be this kind of one, you know, mystery or obscure food that's impossible to find or costs a ton of money, and that's going to hold the key to your nutrition. It really just doesn't work that way. So the whole concept of this is that all of the foods that I'm identifying in this book as super, when you're creating a whole bunch of different meals and snacks for your family from them, you can provide the nutrients that growing bodies need.
How close do you think people are to getting the nutrients that they need? Because you're always hearing about people don't come anywhere near the number of servings of vegetables they're supposed to be having. We have a diet generally in this country that seems to be a little overloaded on protein, even though everybody's constantly talking about getting more protein. What do you think?
I think the closer you are to having balance, the better you are in terms of meeting all your nutrient needs. That said, I think we are falling short. I mean, the U.S. Dietary Guidelines, there's a new one coming out very shortly for 2015. I mean, they continue to do research, and they identify that we're not meeting our needs for these things, both children and adults. But I think that, you know, that kind of speaks to the entire country. I do think if you have that balance in your diet, if you have fruits and vegetables represented, whole grains, you know, dairy or a dairy alternative, depending on, you know, if there's any allergies or anything involved. Some protein, but not just animal-based protein, plant-based protein as well. If you can strike that balance, and I think for some people it might be easier than others, you must be doing a better job at meeting your nutrient needs. But there's still work to be done. I think we still need to get better at it.
So you talk about the superfoods that you're talking about. You want them to be bright and colorful and easy. And that sounds like you want to really get the kids on board with it. How do you feel about there's kind of been this other trend of, I think one of the books is called The Sneaky Chef, you know, basically kind of hiding nutritious things in stuff that is maybe not terribly nutritious that kids would like better. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. And I mean, this is a big controversy among parents and you know, you get people on one side or the other, like to sneak or not to sneak. I would prefer that my kids actually know what they're eating and know that they like it. That said, I mean, I think that there's also something, so I don't sneak. I do, for example, though, incorporate other nutrients into, like, I use fruit and vegetable purees for baking, or I use, like, I have a recipe in the book that actually takes purees that are for baby food and turning it into a pasta sauce. So it uses butternut squash as a base. I don't think that that's sneaking as long as that particular ingredient serves an important purpose in that recipe. I think that the sneaking starts to get a little bit crazy and you're trying to shove all these different things, you know, in and the kid won't notice. But then that doesn't really foster healthy eating habits if the child doesn't understand that they like butternut squash. You know, so I think ultimately you're doing your child a disservice by sneaking all those things in.
Oh, no, I completely agree with you. I think that the goal of well, this particular thing that we're going to be talking about diet and nutrition, but pretty much any parenting-related thing, is we want our kids to be able to make the choices that are best for them when we're not around to tell them about it. And so if, you know, your kid's going over to somebody else's house, they should be able to get the best snacks that they're being served or whatever. But yeah, I mean, they need to be able to understand what they're eating. I think that's definitely a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and you would hope that you know, it might not go great from the first stab at it, you know, especially if there's a couple of things that you know your child maybe not be a huge fan of. But I recommend something more lines of maybe presenting that same food in a different way. Or maybe somehow getting them involved in the preparation of it, whether it be going to the farmer's market, out in the garden, you know, even at the grocery store, whatever, and kind of having them become their own advocate for that particular ingredient, as opposed to just saying, I'm just going to sneak it in, ha-ha, they're eating it and they don't know it, you know?
What are some of the fruit and vegetable recipes, or just some themes that we're talking about? I don't mean recipes like, you know, go through every ingredient, but generally, what are the kinds of things that we're looking for when looking for fruits and vegetables?
Well, I think there's an opportunity to put fruits and vegetables in all kinds of places. I think, you know, parents, and I even do this often as well, you just kind of get in this rut. Well, let me throw broccoli on the plate so that there's broccoli, you know. So, you know, in the book, I try to incorporate them in different ways. I have, you know, a recipe it's a marinara sauce, but I actually add cooked carrots to it. And literally, it was just an example of me having cooked carrots in my refrigerator and saying, okay, I don't want to waste these. What can I do with them? And I was making a sauce. And I said, well, the carrots will probably taste nice in here. You know, let's do it. I also incorporate things, you know, fruits into baked goods is always fun and easy, whether it be for muffins or a banana bread. There's a banana chocolate chip bread into the book. And then also for treats as well. I use a lot of fresh fruit to help with that natural sweetness. So there's a recipe for fruit burst ice pops, which is really just a diluted 100% fruit juice with big chunks of fresh fruit in it. Makes the popsicles look amazing. The kids love them, and certainly a lot better for you than something that you would get, you know, out of a box.
Yeah, I think that's important by mentioning that there's big chunks of fruit, because there's been a lot of talk about in nutrition circles about how juice is by itself not a whole lot better for you than just sugar. That when you have the fiber in there, the actual fruit, then you're getting somewhere.
Absolutely. And fiber is really important. It's one of those nutrients that, you know, both children and adults tend to not get enough of. It's really important for digestion. And so, yeah, there is that out there. I mean, my children do drink, you know, when they drink juice, we go for 100% fruit juice. But it should not be a replacement for the real thing, because anytime you process, you know, a fruit or vegetable into juice, you lose the fiber.
Talking with Dana Angelo White, who's the author of First Bite, Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking with Dana.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Let's hear from an identity thief.
Identities are easy to catch online. I send people an official-looking email pretending to be their bank or credit card company and ask them to confirm their personal information. Books them every time.
Safeguard your personal information on the phone, online, and especially at home, because half of identity theft occurs by someone you think you know. Keep your identity to yourself and take a bite out of crime. Learn more from the National Crime Prevention Council at ncpc.org.
A message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
I don't recycle. I mean, we can just find another planet for your kids to live on, you know?
Noted non-recycler Tommy Crenshaw talks about the future.
Oh, I can totally see finding another planet that can support life when ours fills up with trash.
As an alternative to recycling?
Yeah, an alternative. So we, like, don't have to do it. Recycling. There are lots of planets. Finding one is just a matter of time.
Many people say that recycling is pretty simple and convenient. A matter of keeping select items out of the trash. A lot simpler than finding a new planet, Tommy.
Come on, there's a bunch of planets out there.
Would you recycle on this new planet, Tommy? Or just use it up and throw it away, too?
I really don't have a clue.
Log on to yougottabekidding.org and learn about all the ways you can recycle. Unless you're into lame excuses like Tommy's.
Hey, recycling's just not my thing. Starting over on a new planet? Now that's exciting.
Don't be that guy. Unless you want people looking at you funny. Log on to yougottabekidding.org.
My name's Rachel, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
I'll start drinking in middle school, and I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Broad. If you're just joining us, talking with Dana Angelo White, who's the author of First Bites, Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. You know, there's another thing. This has probably been going on a lot longer than I've been aware of it. My 11-year-old has suddenly taken this obsessive interest in cooking. And so my DVR is filled up with all of these cooking shows. And why I'm mentioning this is kind of what you were talking about. Oh, you had some cooked carrots around. Some of these shows, I think, can be really instructive. One of them, I think, is called Chopped, that she makes me watch sometimes. And they give each of the contestants a box. And they open up the box, and it's got, like, the most bizarre ingredients, things that you just would not ever expect would go together. And they see how these chefs prepare something using stuff that just doesn't seem like it should go. And that's probably a pretty good mindset to have if you're going to be cooking and if you're going to be eating, is that things don't always have to be exactly the way you might think they should be.
Absolutely. And so I must say bravo to your 11-year-old, because that's awesome. and in full disclosure, I must say I actually do work for the Food Network, so I have to say I'm a big fan of Chopped as well, but I have to mention that I'm their nutrition expert for foodnetwork.com, so I do behind-the-scenes things for the website. It's lovely that she's expressing an interest in there, and I think there is a beauty to being able to prepare something without following a recipe. I think for some people that's easier than others, but, you know, I also don't like to waste anything, so I'm a big fan of, you know, we also have a CSA. Do you know what that is?
No.
So
certified something?
It stands for Community Supported Agriculture. So I work with a local farmer, and we get basically a share of her harvest every year. And so she delivers a box of goodies, you know, produce items to us every week. And in this sense, that's kind of our Chopped box. You know, we open it up and then decide, okay, well, here's what we have for the week in terms of produce. What are we going to do with it? You know, so I think that's fun. And my children get involved as well. I must tell you, my older daughter is 5, and when the box gets dropped off, she gets really excited. Like, she really wants to see what's in there too. So cooking, getting that hands-on experience with the food, and even for younger children, I mean, there's plenty of things they can do too, can make a huge difference in their willingness to try and their, you know, being excited about eating.
What do you tell people who are really not cooks? They just really don't have any great interest in it. It's not exciting. It seems to be just a total waste of time. I'm sort of talking about myself here, but, you know, how do you, as somebody who really doesn't feel like cooking a lot, are there ways to get good nutrition into your children and into yourself, for that matter, that don't involve a lot of preparation?
Absolutely. Just thinking, the first thing that came to my mind while you were saying that was something like a smoothie. You know, that requires very little maintenance or creativity. If you have, you know, if you have a decent blender, you can get the job done. And you can make an amazingly healthy breakfast in about 2 minutes. You know, so it's not time-consuming. You know, you do want to have certain ingredients on hand. I usually use, you know, some sort of yogurt, frozen fruit is usually the base for most of my smoothies. And that's all you need. And you'd be certainly better off making that smoothie at home than if you were to go out to one of those fancy smoothie shops where they're very expensive and they're always using more added sugar and kind of, you know, ingredients that aren't quite as good for you.
Yeah, smoothies have been a big staple for me anyway. And they're kind of like what you're talking about with the cooked carrots and what they do on Chopped, is like whatever happens to be around. Just as long as there's enough frozen strawberries in there to absorb the taste of the yams or, you know, whatever else I'm throwing in, it's fine.
And you've got to come up with your own. We have our family favorites. There's a couple of recipes in the book that are named after my children because that's like their signature. That's what they love to make. And so that's kind of fun too. It's like inspired these special family recipes that are unique, you know, to your household. So I think that's fun too.
That's Charlie's Penny with butternut squash sauce. Is that one of them?
Yep, that's for my daughter, Charlotte. And then there's a Maddie. My older daughter's name is Madeline, so it's her creamy, dreamy banana shake. that's in there as well. So
okay.
I didn't go crazy naming. I could probably have attached any one of these recipes to one of my children, but I stuck to the ones that were really kind of staples in their progression into eating solid foods. And those were the ones, like there's a pumpkin muffin named after my younger daughter as well. She's truly just obsessed with them. She loves them. And then that's now part of the joy of me making them, is knowing how excited she's going to get about it.
All right. Let's talk about some dairy and egg recipes. And dairy and egg, you know, they're two things that people, or a lot of people, are allergic to, either one or both of those things. So that's going to be a challenge if you happen to have a lactose intolerant person or an egg allergy kind of a person. How do you make sure that they're getting the nutrients that are in eggs and milk that aren't necessarily available anywhere else?
Sure. So I think as far as the dairy goes, I'll tackle that one first. It's definitely become a lot easier nowadays to have those dairy alternatives. And I actually incorporate a lot of those. No one in my house has an allergy, but things like soy milk, almond milk, coconut milk, they all offer different flavor profiles and texture profiles. So I actually like to use them because I think in some recipes they actually work even better than milk does. Nowadays they're all fortified to kind of match milk. And you know, you're looking in dairy, you're usually talking about calcium and vitamin D, those really important nutrients. So you can kind of, you know, whether it's in cereal or in a smoothie or something of that nature, you can choose whichever one of those beverages you like and get those same nutrients.
Okay.
Yogurt, actually, what a lot of people don't know, I recently learned this from a colleague of mine, is that Greek yogurt is actually lower in lactose than regular yogurt. So oftentimes, if you are lactose intolerant, you know, there's all kind of degrees of it and levels of it in terms of tolerance. Greek yogurt is actually easier. So some people that have lactose intolerant can consume Greek yogurt without a problem.
Well, while we're talking about food issues and difficulties processing things in your body, let's talk about grains, too, because there seems to be so many people getting onto a gluten-free kick or different kinds of grain problems. How do you deal with that one? Because I actually am on a gluten-free diet at this point, and it is so hard to find. Just like, you can't go to a bakery, you can't have a pizza, you can't have pretty much anything that's got any stuff in it. And so many things that are, you'd think, would be gluten-free, actually the package says processed on machinery that has, has wheat products.
It can definitely be a challenge. So, and I usually, what I recommend to my clients and you know, to people is that, you know, knowing whether you have celiac disease or not makes a really big difference in terms of, if you have celiac disease, you certainly cannot consume gluten at all.
No, mine's an optional thing, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I think that's the one place I start with people. Even if they say, look, I cut it out, I feel better, I said, okay, great, but let's find out from here on out whether, how strict you need to be. That said, I have a couple of people in my life, I'm very, very close to relatives and very close friends that do have celiac disease, and their children have celiac disease. I kind of do get some insight into what their experience is. And then I find myself kind of experimenting with a lot of gluten-free options, you know, so when they come over, and at family parties and things like that, they can be involved in what everybody else is eating. I think it does pose a challenge. It also has gotten easier. For example, I use in the book, brown rice is one of the superfoods. But it's, you know, most people think, okay, brown rice, you think of the grain. There's actually a lot of other products out there made with brown rice. So there's a recipe for brown rice pasta dish. And any of the pasta recipes in the book you could swap out for brown rice pasta. We love that in my house. Nobody here has a gluten issue, but we eat brown rice pasta at least once a week. It's a nice option. My kids love pasta, and they'd probably eat regular pasta every night if I let them. But the idea here is, you know, this way they're still getting that pasta that they enjoy, but they're really, you know, it's coming in a completely different nutrient profile. So I think using tactics like that can hopefully help. And that said, too, you do have to be careful, especially with the gluten-free cookies and a lot of the gluten-free baked goods. You can find them out there now, but also they oftentimes are higher in calories or higher in sugar. So you want to be careful so that doesn't lead to kind of, you know, undesired weight gain.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the big things is, yeah, you can make up for the lack of taste that some of the gluten-free things have by putting a little extra butter and sugar in
or
it.
Or salt and sugar, too,
sure. That pretty much does it. Last thing, what's been the biggest challenge for you in getting this message across?
I don't know. I think it's getting people just to try. I come in contact with so many families who just say, you know, I can't cook, my kids aren't going to eat, we fight at the dinner table all the time, and they just want to give up because it only becomes harder as the children get older. So I think that would be I've kind of designed these recipes and this book to help with that, to make it accessible and make it as easy as possible so that hopefully people are willing to try and then realize that they're actually capable of maybe more than they thought they were.
Dana Angelo White, the author of First Bite, Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. And what's the website?
It is www.danawhitenutrition.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at DW Nutrition.
Dana, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. As you know, we do kind of a lot of toy reviews here, and one of the things that we get a lot of is building systems, and there are all sorts of shapes and sizes and levels of difficulty and materials. We always like playing with them. We always like discovering new ones. So this week, we're going to take a look at a whole bunch of them, one that's kind of traditional and two that maybe we'll say that they're twists on classics. First of all, there's the Take-Along Zoo and Aquarium from Playmobil. I guess we should start by wishing Playmobil a happy 40th birthday this year. Playmobil sets are always well-made, they're colorful, they're fun to play with, and what could be better than that? And this particular thing from Playmobil is no exception. But what makes the zoo and aquarium especially unique is that it's great for both indoor and outdoor play. It comes with trees and pools and fences and quite a few animals like zebras and giraffes and lions and fish and walruses, as well as human caretakers. That's a lot of pieces for one set. And there's room for a few more just in case your child wants to invite some other animal friends over for a visit. When you open up the kit, one side is the zoo, the other side is the aquarium, which your child can actually fill up with water and let the sea creatures and the rest of the animals, hey, giraffes can swim too, take a dip. When playtime's over, all the pieces fit nicely into the case, which, after you've drained and dried it, folds up very nicely for storage and easy transport. Costs about $49, and again, it's from Playmobil. Next up, we've got Light Stacks from Light Stacks. That's the name of the company, with an X. From a distance, Light Stacks look like Duplo, and you probably know those as Lego's jumbo-sized bricks for preschoolers. But if you connect at least one Stacks block to the power base, and every other block that's connected, directly or indirectly, will light up. The base, which can run on batteries or a USB cable, has enough juice in it to light up at least 100 bricks. Stacks are compatible with Duplo, but only the Stacks blocks are going to illuminate, of course. But our favorite feature is the auto shutoff, which means your child can build a really cool nightlight, a different one every night, and it will shut off after 15 minutes. Stacks come in sets ranging from 12 blocks to more than 100, and prices range from $35 up to $250. You can find out more at lightstacks.com. Finally, we've got the Lego Chain Reactions book from Klutz. If you like the classic game of Mousetrap, you're going to love Klutz's very clever Lego Chain Reaction book. The motto on the book is, teach your bricks new tricks. And by incorporating ordinary Lego elements and a few other ingredients, that's exactly what happens. What's the point of doing ridiculously simple things like tossing a gum wrapper or bouncing a ball in one step when you can do it in 20 or 30 steps using levers and pulleys and ramps and hammers and strings, tires, funnels, all sorts of stuff that you just assemble to get one thing from another place, but it makes it so fun. It's engaging and entertaining and educational for the whole family. Comes with 30-plus Lego elements and instructions for building 10 completely novel and really entertaining Rube Goldberg kind of machines. Retails for about $20, and you can get it at klutz.com, K-L-U-T-Z. That's it for this week's Parents at Play segment. You know you can get a lot more reviews, toys and games and all sorts of great stuff at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with more reviews for you. Until then, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.